Shortly after the start of the 2017 NFL season, Malcolm Jenkins, Anquan Boldin, and Torrey Smith invited Eagles owner Jeffrey Lurie and NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell to meet with police, grassroots organizations, policy leaders, and public defenders in Philadelphia. The group, along with Rodney McLeod and Chris Long, met to get a better understanding of the complexities of the criminal justice reform work that many of the players have been conducting over the past year to strengthen the community. Their first stop was the headquarters of the Philadelphia Police Department to meet with Police Commissioner Richard Ross.
The biggest reason we're here is the league and Mr. Lurie is trying to better understand what some of the players in different cities are trying to accomplish, especially in the light of all of the social turmoil and the protests and all of this context. So the biggest thing that we want to pull out of these meetings is, one, getting an understanding of the context, what are some of the challenges that our law enforcement faces, whether it be in the communities trying to actually get their jobs done, or some challenges that you face from a training and public trust standpoint.
Everyone knows that there are certainly issues that we're all contending with across the nation. We work very, very hard to try to make connections with our communities, realizing that, you know, there are inherent issues. What is important, in my view, is that we never hit each other with brush and make assumptions about who believes what, either based on their color or based on where they grew up. And instead, when you can roll up your sleeves and really get down to it and say, okay, what drives your thinking? What drives my thinking? What are some of the problems that you see both in community and law enforcement? My favorite expression is a great deal of what you see depends on what you're looking for. And so if you only look for the bad, what you miss a professional athlete who's out there trying to do something, you know, for the betterment of community. You miss a whole host of other things because your mind's eye is geared towards seeing negativity. Whereas if you open your mind, and I ask not only police officers but community to do the same thing, we have a lot of work to do, and we haven't reached that pinnacle, and we will never think that we have.
The next destination was a local community agency, Why Not Prosper, where founders of various community nonprofits dedicated to criminal justice reform detailed the struggles that formerly incarcerated people face upon re-entry into society.
Hello, everybody. My name is Russell Craig. I'm an artist. I work with Mirror Arts in Philadelphia, and I served on my last stay 7 years at Greaterford Prison. I was sentenced to a 5 to 10, but I wound up doing 7. I like realized like my lifestyle and how I was like just continuously winding up in prison and for long terms and things like that, and I kind of realized like my whole life was going to wind up in jail on some like petty crime things. So I started to think and separate myself from like the norm of like prison activities. And I like educated myself, taught myself how to read and write and things like that. Then I went to the library, got books on how to do art because it was like a passion of mine as a kid. I decided I wanted to be an artist when I got out, and that's what I would do.
Since my release in 2000, I've had incredible employment opportunities. At one point, I was the vice president of a telemarketing sales company. That telemarketing sales company folded. I had to reapply for work. And of course, I applied for work as an executive. I'm college educated. I'm a veteran. My fence was in 93. I paid my time. And I apply for positions, and I get hired. And then they do a criminal background check, and then I'm terminated. That's happened to me over 20 times.
I went to get a job at a place through the porta potties. It was eventually turned down because I had a criminal record. And, you know, my self-esteem went that low because I felt if I couldn't get a job cleaning the toilet, what could I do to sustain myself? And that's what a lot of men and women face.
I've grown up in a country that imprisons second highest percentage of its population in the world, and that's been the case for at least my whole life. What do you and the ACLU and anyone around the room feel is what has not changed? Because it's been that case for as long as I can remember, and it's very frustrating for us all. What's the lever we can try to pressure? Where is it at?
Being tough on crime is something that a prosecutor can get elected on these days. Prosecutors have never been challenged to think that the thing that will most positively impact public safety is not to give someone a conviction and not to incarcerate them, because it costs, in New York, it costs $200,000 a year to incarcerate a person. In Pennsylvania, it costs $30,000 a year. The prosecutor's not thinking that he's making an economic, social decision that's going to impact a person, a family, and a community for decades. And so now we're challenging prosecutors to actually take a look at their practice, reevaluate that, and then come up with some viable options to utilizing tools that are going to positively impact public safety, because what we're doing is not working for us.
The group then observed several public bail hearings at the Criminal Justice Center and continued on to the offices of the Defender Association of Philadelphia for further insight into the city's bail and pretrial system and examining policies and legislation.
We see a lot of activism around criminal justice practices, and a lot of people talk about policing. They stop at the front door of the criminal justice building, and then they pick back up when people are being coming released, which is called reentry. So everything that happens in between is totally ignored. And so you coming down to see the first step was really a great learning experience of what we see every day.
Preliminary arraignments are really kind of one of the first court appearance, the first court appearance for folks who are coming through the criminal justice system. It's where people are read the charges that the DA is going to proceed with against them in a particular case, and where bail is initially set.
The whole notion about bail, right? From the prosecutor's viewpoint, is to protect the public. Somebody's been charged with a serious crime. We want to make sure they show up for trial, and we want to make sure they don't harm anybody right in between now and the trial. The thing falls apart because if you've got the money, right? Forget about it, $500,000. We have people sitting up at the jail who can't make $500 bail. They don't have $50. The 2.2 million people who sit in jail today across the country, a lot of them are pretrial. They've never been tried, they're presumed innocent, but they don't have the money to get their own release. You could spend not just 3 days, you could spend 3 months, you could spend a year before a case actually gets heard. And if the charges are dismissed and you win, that's it. They say sorry, they give you $5 for your transportation home, and that's it.
75% of people who need $500 or less to get out of jail in Philadelphia, based on 2016 data, were in jail for 31 days or longer, simply because they didn't have $500. The research shows that even 1 to 3 days incarceration increases the likelihood that you'll be found guilty. It increases the likelihood that you're going to commit another crime after you're released. And if you spend 8 to 14 days in jail, you're 56% more likely to be rearrested before trial, 51% more likely to recidivate after your sentence is over, so to commit a new crime after your sentence is over. So we care about this for a lot of reasons, but we also appreciate that you care about it too, because it also speaks to both the rights of individuals and the safety of our community.
So when you say bail reform, what do you think the priorities are in that?
So we're looking at some of our lower level offenses now in terms of bail reform. And we're saying, do these need a cash bail determination? Or can we have some other conditions for release?
Such as
our office is working with social services, and we're saying this person is going to go to NA, two times a week, Narcotics Anonymous, 2 times a week. And, we'd ask that he be allowed to do that. We'll bring family members in that will say, I'm going to help him get to the treatment as well as make it to court.
The day ended with the group reconvening at the NovaCare complex to share some final thoughts.
The biggest thing I wanted to accomplish out of today, when I took this journey myself, it was kind of surprising to see. You start with, police brutality and so, okay, that's what we need to change. But after you kind of unveil it, you see that's just the tip of the iceberg, and it's actually a pretty complicated and vast issue that has a lot of different wheels, and it's almost sometimes overwhelming.
I found it informative.
Yeah, I did too.
I didn't see it a lot.
A lot of food for thought. I mean, it's hard to make good decisions on how to impact if you don't really understand all aspects, and this was a good beginning for me to get a real feel for. There's so many aspects and problems here. Mm-hmm. And no real clear sort of models. It's surprising to me that the cities and different groups don't come up with more best practices models, because these are Philadelphia doesn't have to stand out as the incarceration capital of America or Pittsburgh or whatever. There's other ways to do it and other ways to accomplish better systems. So, I know like within the NFL, and Roger always encourages, what are the best practices from team to team? And here it's hard to get a handle on
And no one has all the answers. New York may be doing some good things and is having a positive effect, but we got to see what's being successful in certain areas and model that element of it. That's what's missing to me.
We were able to see so many different groups today, and everyone has their viewpoint. And everyone who was able to communicate today was trying to figure out, like, what's the right thing. It wasn't choosing sides. It's not, hey, I'm pro-police or I'm anti-this. Like, it was about, hey, it's issues out here, and we need to address it. And nothing's going to be done, like, in terms of, like, how we want to see it until we all collectively come together and understand that there are issues. And some people need to understand there are issues. Like, right. So it's important for us to, you know, say that in a way that's not, hey, we love, you know, Mr. Ross and all the things he's doing with his department. And he acknowledges that, you know, there are some things that they can be better. And I think it's important for people to understand that. We understand that, too. And it's our, you know, it's our responsibility because this affects us. It affects our community. It affects our families. And we have to be able to push that forward. So many people... So many different levels on the same page. I think that, you know, if we do it the right way, that we can really create change.
Players care, and that we are, you take these helmets off, we still go back to these communities. We grew up in these communities. We have family that still live in these communities. And most of our teams are in these communities. Hopefully what we've done today can be replicated in Pittsburgh, Cleveland, Detroit. I think that we can play a major part in changing the narrative from this argumentative, combative narrative to one of solutions, one that is aimed at bringing people together, because that's what's unique about this game, is that it brings together people of all walks willingly to the table and then to be able to have dialogue.